Welcome to the Cold Brew Podcast. I'm Dave Gasper, joined as always by Matt Carroll. You know us as the editors at reviewingthebrew.com. And we got quite the podcast coming up. A lot has been going on now that spring training is in full effect. All the position players have reported, pitchers and catchers have reported, and we are seeing news. We are seeing baseball every single day. We're seeing bullpen sessions. We're hearing the zip of the fastball. We're hearing the pop of the mitt. We're hearing the crack of the bat. And Matt, it is beautiful, and it has been something that we've been looking forward to for so long. And we got a lot to get to on the pod today.
Yeah, and today actually even was the first spring training game of the year. I definitely did not have that game pulled up on my phone at work today.
No, not at all.
Not I. I didn't see Joe Musgrove get lit up for however many runs in the first inning. Definitely not. So, but for those of you who did, congratulations for getting to watch some friggin' baseball again today.
Yes, real baseball, professional baseball, and you're able to see all of it through the see-through pants that Fanatics has provided to all of the players this year. I've seen the pictures of these. We got, you can see guys' underwear. You can see what, like, it has been absolutely insane. Like, the jerseys that have come out, like, before we even get to the rest of the Brewers stuff, like, the jerseys from Nike and Fanatics that they have given these players, so many complaints, the lettering on the jerseys, but seeing the pants, like, I get making pants breathable, okay? That's one thing, but this is a little too much breathing in these pants. What are we doing?
It's bad. Like, you can see the bottom of the jersey, like, exactly where it's tucked in. You can see the patch on the jersey underneath the pants. Like you said, like, it's just every step.
You can see their underwear.
Yeah. It's so bad. And it's like, it's been like every step has been like, you saw the lettering being super, super tiny compared to the previous years. And it's like, okay, well, that's one thing. And then you saw like the patches and how they're not even stitched on anymore. They're like that, they're either not screen printed, but like
press,
whatever vinyl material they are. And like, okay, well, that's a little cheap looking, but whatever. But then, holy crap, yeah, once you got started seeing them with the pants on, particularly the, like, either white or cream-colored jerseys, it's bad. It's bad out there, man. And the sad part is there's nothing they're going to do about it. Like, they're not going to fix this midseason. It's going to be a whole year of having to put up with this before they maybe change course, which they honestly probably won't even, but, oh. Oh, brutal, brutal start to the Fanatics on-field jersey era.
Yeah, it has been, yeah, the new era that we're looking at is has not been great, just like new era's cap designs generally.
God, they're making new era look good.
Yeah, and that's hard to do. That's really hard to do these past couple of years, but yeah, it's been an absolute disaster. The players' union has been getting involved in they're like, we have some major issues with the pants. Everyone can see through. We can see everybody's business. Everyone knows whether guys are boxers or Breeze dudes. No one needed to know who's a boxers or a briefs guy.
I'm scared for the first person who gets a Gatorade bath. Like,
oh no, I didn't even think of that.
That's gonna be bad. It's gonna be friggin' translucent at that point.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's been an absolute disaster. I feel so bad. I mean, like, you see it sometimes even with the, like, the previous jerseys when the Gatorade bath comes in and like all of a sudden it's like, oh, you can see a little more. Like, we've seen also, like, they tear guys' like shirts off like during celebrations now. That's one thing, but the pants, that's too much. See-through pants, it's not what anyone needs. Although here's my conspiracy theory. I'm putting on my tinfoil hat now. So the NFL has been drawing in a whole bunch more female audience members because of Taylor Swift dating Travis Kelce. All right. So maybe Fanatics and MLB is looking at this see-through pants for the baseball players. Maybe they're trying to attract the female audience to the game a bit more. Maybe. I don't know. Tinfoil hat.
Okay, but that would end up getting canceled out by them soon going to have to ban children from the ballpark.
That's a very fair point. That is another problem. That's a problem with tinfoil hat conspiracy corner over here. But still, I don't know. Maybe that's what's going on. But it's not good. We know that for sure. But I'll tell you what is good. What is good is that Brandon Woodruff is going to be wearing a Brewers uniform again. That is what's good. And that's what we were talking about last week on the podcast. I brought it up. I'm just like, hey, you know, we're at the point now where players can be transferred to the 60-day injured list. So Brandon Woodruff's market is going to be heating up. And why not bring him back in a Brewers uniform? You know, let's see him come back. And sure enough, a few days later, Matt Arnold, known listener of the Cold Brew podcast, said, you know what? Dave had a great idea over there. Those guys are great. I'm going to sign Brandon Woodruff to a 2-year deal with a mutual option for 2026. Don't get your hopes up. Mutual options are not going to be exercised. But, hey, Brandon Woodruff is going to be back for 2 more years. He's not really going to pitch at all this year. But Woodruff will be back when he's healthy, and he will get an opportunity to pitch again as a Brewer and prove that he is back to his full form and back to what he was before. If he is, great. If not, that sucks. But hey, you brought him back. You gave him a shot. He's going to get a chance to rebound and rehab, Matt, where he's most comfortable with the organization that drafted him back in 2014 and has been with him his entire career.
Yep. And he said as part of that, it was important to him that he gets to rehab in Milwaukee specifically. He wanted that as part of this whole agreement. And so he gets that. I said last week when we talked about it that I wasn't sure that I would do that move, but if it happened, I would be ecstatic. And it happened, and I am ecstatic. I absolutely love Woodruff. He's been one of my favorite players for years now. I am so happy to see him back in a Brewers uniform. And I actually really like how the Brewers structured this contract. I think when we talked about it in the past, the assumption was what made the most sense was 2-year contract backloaded. It is, but it's backloaded into the third option year. So the way it's structured, he's guaranteed $17.5 million. $2.5 million this year, that makes sense. $5 million next year, so really not that much. And then the buyout is for 10, 20 if both sides exercise, but like you said, that's just not going to happen. So he ends up making quite a bit, but the Brewers get to defer this, not like the Dodgers defer things, but they get to defer this for a couple of years and not have to take that hit for a while. Which is good. I also think it's interesting that if you look at some of the highest paid players on the Brewers, a lot of them right now are making a lot of money this year with buyouts next year, or are Christian Yelich. But you also have Devin Williams, who is, you know, making his amount this year. They've got that option for next year for around the amount that he probably would have made if he were to hit arbitration next year. We'll see if he's still on the team by then, or if that, you know, what ends up happening with him. So it's actually not until he's off the books when that $10 million ends up having to be paid by the Brewers. So a lot of the money that they currently, the big money that they currently have on the books outside of Yelich and I guess, Jurio in a way, although his escalates too, comes off the books by the time the Brewers have to pay that $10 to Woodruff. So I thought that was a really smart way of setting it up, and it didn't occur to me that they could do it that way, but it makes this even better of a move by the Brewers.
Yeah, I totally agree. Being able to keep that payroll down a bit in 2025. Because, I mean, if you get Brandon Woodruff back to his old form and you're paying him just $5 million on it for, I mean, for that kind of value, I mean, that's incredible. And that would allow the Brewers to spend that money on that 2025 team elsewhere and whatever other upgrades they would like to make. But also thinking about this, too, for the state of the rotation. Now, granted, Woodruff is not going to help you in the rotation at all this year. If you can get him back late in the year, they're leaving that potentially open. Woodruff said he's feeling good, and the surgery went really well, which is always great to hear. But again, not really counting on him for anything this year. But you look ahead to 2025, Matt, and that rotation, you get Woodruff back atop it. You still have Freddie Peralta. And then for 3-4-5, I mean, we'll see who develops this year. But you could have that lined up with D.L. Hall and Robert Gasser and Jacob Mizorowski or Carlos Rodriguez filling out those final spots in that starting rotation. So you have Aaron Ashby that could be in there as well. So that's going to be a talented group, but a talented young group behind them. But you would still have Woodruff and Peralta leading the way. You'd have those experienced veterans atop the rotation, kind of like you do now with Peralta and Wade Miley, although Wade Miley is not, even though he's also bearded, he is not the same as Brandon Woodruff.
No, exactly. And you must have read my article, because I have one on the site exactly about projecting
the rotation for 2025.
So, and yeah, those were a bunch of the names that I had in there. Jansen Junk, even as a, like, who knows what could happen by then.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not.
Unlikely, but maybe.
Yeah. Also thought that was interesting that the whole Jansen Junk going to Japan ended up being BS.
Oh, shocking.
That was a fun development that it turned out that was just someone making crap up on the internet.
Whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Matt.
Yeah,
wait a minute. Right? You're going to tell me that somebody on the internet made something up?
Yeah, to make themselves more popular, even. Like,
oh my goodness.
Even more shocking.
I don't know who, if you can't trust the internet, Matt, who can you trust?
Right?
Yeah. And like, here's the crazy part too. That was on his wedding day.
Yeah, that's
like you saw the story, like he's getting texted about it like during his wedding, about him going to Japan. Like, what? Like of all days, like literally of all days, for this to happen, for someone to make up a story about Jansen Junk thinking about trying to find an opportunity in Japan, it just happens to be the day he's getting married. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the odds of that? Of all the players to pick to write that report about, of all the days to pick to write it, it has to be when he's getting married.
Yeah. Do you remember, because I tried going back and finding a tweet about it and I couldn't find anything. Do you remember where that originated?
Because I do not. I thought maybe it was like a foreign like media, like someone either from Japan or something that was putting that out there. I'm not sure where exactly I saw it from. Who knows? Maybe it's like Brewer World, where they just kind of make stuff up and sometimes it sticks and then they put it in their bio that they were first on it. Even though they're not legitimate reports, but hey, you know, anything can happen. But yeah, so I wouldn't take it. Like, it sounded fishy to begin with, the whole Jansen Junk to Japan thing, because typically that's players who don't have a 40-man roster spot that do that. Guys who have a 40-man roster spot generally don't look to go overseas. And Jansen Junk has a spot on the roster, and there's a lot of openings in that Brewers rotation right now. So him thinking about going to Japan didn't make any logical sense to begin with. But yeah, he's here in Brewers camp, and he's going to be trying to compete for one of those open spots.
Yeah, a lot of players who just give up $750,000 just out of the blue. For sure.
Yeah.
Definitely something that people do. Jansen Junk, by the way, I saw on the news tonight, did trim the mustache, the glorious mustache down a little bit. So pour one out for that glorious stash. It'll be back.
I'm sure it will. Yeah. But hey, you know, sometimes you got to change things up. The mustache wasn't working for him last year, so maybe gotta try clean shaving this year, or maybe just go the full beard. That's my vote. I like the full beard. You know, I think it works. It works for Brandon Woodruff. Works that's for Wade true. Miley. So that's true. Freddie Peralta's been growing out a beard too. So hey, you know, just saying. I think may not be a bad idea. But anyways, that's just me. Personal facial hair preferences aside, Brandon Woodruff is back, and we are absolutely thrilled about it on that two-year deal. The rotation is going to be in a much better spot. And I think this also helps, I mean, even still with a PR move. I know still some may have, you know, had a bit more of a positive view on the Corbin Burns trade than we did. But still, with Burns being traded away, and losing Woodruff too at the time, losing Woodruff for nothing, that was definitely a bitter pill to try to swallow. But now Woodruff coming back is going to be huge for Milwaukee. And also too, the Brewers will get an opportunity to get him back, but also recoup a draft pick and give him a qualifying offer if they want to. After that 2025 season, if he comes back and pitches as well as he did before and declines that mutual option, which he likely will no matter what, if that happens, then the Brewers could still give Woodruff a qualifying offer and they could recoup a draft pick for him, although this time it would be in 2026. But still, after potentially losing him for nothing and the Brewers looking to extract as much value as possible for their players, I think that's definitely a win-win for Milwaukee, because, I mean, technically they could trade him at the deadline if they wanted to. But again, if you're being competitive and he's pitching well, I don't see him being traded in the middle of that bounce back season, especially with only a half year left. The other team would not be able to get a qualifying offer on him. So that wouldn't make much sense. So you get a chance to still get some value back out of Woodruff bringing him back.
Right. Essentially paying a little bit for an extra draft pick in the future. And then on top of all of this, you know, one of the things that we didn't mention is you get him back in the clubhouse. You get a leader, a guy who's been a leader for the Brewers for a few years now, who is liked by everyone there in the clubhouse. You get him back. You get him back to kind of help mentor some of the young pitchers who are going to be coming up too. You know, that'll be valuable as players like Gasser and Mizorowski and Rodriguez and maybe an Evan McKendry and DL Hall and, you know, all of these different starters as they, you know, start making their way up to the big leagues and, you know, want a veteran to kind of bounce ideas off of. Brandon Woodruff is as good a guy as any to kind of be able to pick their train. So just all positives. I mean, with the one negative being, you know, what happens if he doesn't quite bounce back from the shoulder injury? Obviously, that's always the risk that any of the 30 teams who potentially signed Woodruff were going to end up having to take. And so that's a risk. But I mean, you're not tied down to him long term if he doesn't
bounce back. And you're only paying him $5
million right.
in 2025. Yeah. So if he sucks, then, well, at least you're not out, like, you know, $20 million or whatever it was for one season. So you're still in a good spot. He's not going to cost you a ton when he comes back, and he could bounce back and be awesome. He could. Mm-hmm. Who knows? We'll find out a year from now when we actually get there. But yeah, being able to get Woodruff back, absolutely a positive for this team and for this organization. So his deal got finalized on the very same day that the Brewers got another deal finalized, another long-awaited deal. Gary Sanchez officially now becomes a Brewer, and he's going to wear number 99. Interesting number choice there for Gary Sanchez. But he comes in on a one-year deal, and it was previously reported that he was going to get $7 million on this deal. But the holdup in this thing being finalized over the past couple of weeks was an issue in the physical. Now, the reports were that it was his right wrist. Sanchez said at spring training that he injured his hand during a workout in the offseason. And that was something that also got flagged or was maybe flagged instead of the wrist. But either way, an issue in the physical caused Sanchez's deal to be dropped from a $7 million guarantee to a $3 million guarantee with $4 million in possible incentives. So he can still get back to that $7 million salary. But that guaranteed money gets cut in half. And odds are, Matt, I don't think Sanchez is going to reach all $4 million of those incentives. But that's a great way for the Brewers to, you know, save even a few more dollars while still getting a very talented bat in Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be interested to see where the incentives lie. Generally, those sit in either games played or at bats. So considering that his most likely role is as a backup catcher with a little bit of designated hitting to go along with it, there's a good chance that he doesn't end up hitting all of those incentives. If he does, that's always a great thing about incentive-laden deals, is if he hits those incentives, then it means he's performing extraordinarily well, which is only a good thing for the Brewers' success. So being able to restructure it this way, it helps from a monetary sense. It helps from a performance sense. Just ends up, being positives for the Brewers. So while it's not a good thing that he ended up getting hurt and something ends up showing up on a physical, it ends up working out a little bit in the Brewers' favor still in the end by the fact that they got to kind of convert it to that, incentive-driven deal. So good that the Brewers, that they were finally able to get this in. That was an important final piece, that the Brewers added to the roster puzzle there at the end, because it did feel that it would have been nice at that point if they could have just added just a little bit more offense. And so, that was exactly when Sanchez, ended up being reported. He even though he doesn't hit for average, he can hit for power. He'll get you home runs. He'll drive in runs, something that the Brewers needed during a lot of those offensive droughts last year. So good thing that they ended up getting this done, and good for the catcher's room. That's a guy who's a veteran. I think it's maybe a little underestimated how decent he is defensively. I'm certainly not saying he's an all-star, but the fact that he ended up being Blake Snell's personal catcher last year definitely goes to say something, that he, can develop a good rapport with pitchers and call a decent game. Blake Snell being the NL Cy Young winner. So, he brings a lot to the Brewers from kind of both sides there. And it's good they were finally able to get that locked up.
Yeah, and maybe the Brewers can now sign Blake Snell, who's still sitting out there on the free agent market. And hey, I spoke it into existence last week with Brandon Woodruff, so maybe I can speak it into existence this week. Come on, Brewers, let's sign Blake Snell. Let's get the NL Cy Young winner on this team. You had a Cy Young winner, and you decided to trade him. So maybe you should bring another Cy Young winner in, and Blake Snell. I mean, that wouldn't be a bad thing for this rotation. So hey, let's get that done. So I'm trying to see if we can this is kind of like a heat check in basketball. It's like, okay, got one shot called, nailed it, and now it's happening. Let's see if we can go with another one, a little bit more of a Hail Mary. I am mixing my sports references now. I'm going from baseball to basketball to football. But still, hey, put up a half-court shot here, okay? See what happens. Maybe Blake Snell will end up coming in. Maybe he can bank it in off the glass. Who knows? But Blake Snell's still sitting out there, as pitchers and catchers have reported.
Hey, we wrote that the Brewers should have signed Reese Hoskins early in the offseason, and they did. Mentioned on the podcast that they should think about bringing Brandon Woodruff back, and they did. Hey, like you said, let's keep pushing the envelope.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not that many quality free agents left out there, but Blake Snell is one of them. And maybe at this point, he's open to a short-term deal. The Brewers love themselves a couple of short-term deals when it comes to free agents, so let's make it happen. Let's make it happen. I'm speaking it into existence. We're going to do the heat check here on calling our shots, but Blake Snell, why not? He's got his personal catcher in Gary Sanchez right here. But the Brewers also planning on going with a three-man weave kind of at catcher, with Contreras, with Sanchez, and with Eric Haas, who is also signed to a major league deal this offseason. Because, if you carry just two, you're going to be left in a difficult spot with Sanchez and Contreras, because Sanchez is going to be your DH most of the time. So that's going to leave you either without a backup catcher if someone gets hurt, or without a DH, neither of which is a desirable position to be in if you're Pat Murphy, who has himself a new scooter, by the way, courtesy of Colin Ray and Wade Miley and the whole pitching staff. But yeah, that's going to be difficult to deal with, carrying three catchers. I wonder how long that's going to last, carrying Haas and Sanchez and Contreras, and just how that's all going to work. I'm very intrigued to see what they're going to do there.
Yeah, but again, to your point, it gets hard when you carry two, and the Brewers do often carry two catchers, so it's not as though that's anything, you know, out of the ordinary for them. But if you are expecting any of them to get a little bit of DH work in, and I think you would expect a little bit of that out of Sanchez, I think you would expect a little bit of that out of Contreras as well, to be honest, yeah, you put yourself in that danger zone, and Eric Haas can't be optioned down. So if he stays on the roster, you know, it needs to be on the 26 man. And as much as this is a Jefferson Caro, you know, fan club that we have right here, I don't think you expect him to make an impact on the 26 man roster early at all. He No. has not touched AAA yet. He's 21 years old, 21 still, correct, right?
I think so. I
think he just turned 21. You know, that's young for AAA as it is, let alone the big leagues. So I'm not saying I don't think, you know, maybe he gets a cup of coffee at some point this year. But I'd be surprised, I guess, if he makes it. You're not going to see him before the All-Star break. Let's just put it that way.
No.
I highly, highly doubt
that. Not unless catastrophic injuries happen to the catching
team. Which, if you didn't carry Haas as well, any injury and you're pulling up Caro, which I just feel like is too early. Again, as much as we love him, as much as we love him, I do think it's, you know, you don't want to rush him either. So I think it's too early to see him in the majors. As much as I love him, I actually wouldn't be heartbroken if we didn't see him at all in 2024, because that meant he got one final full season against AAA competition to kind of like keep building himself up and then truly step in to help be the part of the batteries of the future starting in 2025. So again, if you take him out of the equation for 2024, that's a light group that you have at catcher, which makes the three-man weave that you mentioned make even more sense.
Yeah, I think it's something. I mean, you have both Sanchez and Haas on one-year deals. They're not going to be here long-term. Caro is definitely in the vision back there long-term. But, yeah, you definitely need to give him more time down there in the minor leagues. I don't think we see him at all this year. I think the plan is not to have Caro in the big leagues. And I think that's where bringing someone like Sanchez in helps. Just because, you know, if something were to happen to Haas or Contreras, who are they going to call? It's going to have to be Caro.
Ghostbusters.
Oh. Yeah, I set you up for that one. But, yeah, they don't want to be in that spot where they're in an emergency and they have to call up Caro earlier than they had planned. So they get themselves a little more depth. They improve their roster a little bit by bringing in Sanchez. And one of the veterans that they were thinking of being a part of this group that could have been the guy to call upon in an emergency instead was Austin Nola. And Austin Nola is no longer here because Gary Sanchez is now here. That's why the Brewers did it. I mean, the Brewers signed Austin Nola to a minor league deal with a non-roster invite back in early January. It's like, okay, look, Nola's coming off a bad year. Maybe, you know, we can get him into camp. We can stash him in AAA on this minor league deal. And if anything happens to Haas or Contreras, we can call up an experienced big league backstop, and he can be the backup catcher. He can get himself some at-bats. And we can still give Caro that development time that we're looking for. And instead, they ended up signing Sanchez, who is going to provide a bit more offensively. Sanchez came in to San Diego last year because Austin Nola was not hitting, and he was having his own issues. So a couple of former Padres catchers coming in and one forcing out the other. But Austin Nola ends up getting released here on Thursday from his minor league deal with the Brewers before we even get to a Cactus League game. But Austin Nola's not too upset about this at all, because 5 minutes later, it was announced that he had signed a major league deal with the Kansas City Royals. So Nola is looking at this like, okay, there's clearly no more opportunity for me in Milwaukee. And you look around the league, Kansas City had an opening, and they're like, hey, look, we'll sign you to a major league deal. You know, all these other catchers, we don't really want them. We'll take you and we'll give you a chance, and you're going to have more opportunity over here. So the Brewers gave Nola his release. They're like, fine, we don't need you anymore. Good luck over there. And off he went to the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, that was a interesting sequence of events, because it was exactly how you described it. Was Brewers have let go Austin Nola. Kansas City is signing Austin Nola to a minor league deal. Just kidding, it's a major league deal. Like, all in the series of about 10 minutes, it was those three announcements, like, okay, which just leads me to believe, like, did the Brewers, like, give other teams a heads up? Was Kansas City really just, like, scouring the transaction wire that much? And the second they saw a catcher, were like, ooh, he's ours. Dibs. Like,
I mean, I think they might have seen this coming, like with Sanchez coming in. They mm-hmm. might have looked at this being like, okay, like, what's Austin Nola going to do? Who knows? Maybe they even called the Brewers and they're like, hey, look, we'd love Austin Nola. Like, we'd take him on a major league deal, or maybe other guys around the league did. I'm not sure if there's like an ability to make that kind of like a trade there. Right. I think that's something where it's like, hey, like, we want to sign him to a major league deal. I think that's maybe something where you just cut him loose and give him that chance to look at those opportunities and sign a major league deal elsewhere. Because we see that with other players. When they're seeking opportunities elsewhere, or there's no longer an opportunity for him, like, they will give these players, especially veteran players, their release to be like, hey, like, he's looking for an opportunity, and we, like, we don't have the spot for him, but we're going to give him the chance to go elsewhere. So I think it was the Brewers wanting to do right by him, but I think it was also the Royals looking at this and being like, they got no need for Nola. They have no room for him, and we're going to – who knows? Maybe they reached out to Nola himself, being like, hey, man, if you want out of your deal in Milwaukee, we'll give you a major league deal over here because there's no path for you over there. Although that may be considered tampering, so I'm not sure how much they're able to do that. But
right,
just drama. But it came together very quickly.
Yeah, but Nola was also on a minor league deal here, right? Like, I'm not forgetting that.
Yeah, so, like, he's on a minor league deal with the Brewers with a non-roster invite to camp.
Yeah, so maybe the fact that he was a veteran, he had one of those, because we never really know for sure which players have those types of, you know, like, opt-outs in their deal, where if they're not on a major league roster by a certain date, they can, you know, they can exercise it and become a free agent. Maybe he had a situation like that where he would have been gone eventually anyway. I don't know.
He did, okay. But it was much closer to opening day. It was not February 22nd when his opt-out was.
Yeah. But then that makes even more sense, because if he didn't, then if you're the Brewers, it's like, well, we want him to be our minor league catcher. What incentive is there for the Brewers to just let him go? If he had that opt out anyway, then that makes a lot more sense, because I hadn't seen that yet, that you would just do it now and be like, all right, buddy, like, we both know what's happening here, so we're going to do right by you. And it's nice that the Brewers would do that, to be honest.
Yeah. And it's like, another team is willing to give you a major league opportunity, so we're going to give you your release so you can pursue that, because that's what Nola wants. That's what he thought he wasn't going to get earlier on in the offseason, which is why he signed the minor league deal. Mm-hmm. And now he gets it with Kansas City, and he gets a chance to back up Salvador Perez and be a part of that catching core over there. So best of luck to Nola. But what was your favorite moment, Matt, of the Austin Nola era? in Milwaukee. It lasted about 6 weeks, and there were certainly a lot of moments in that time span. I think my favorite moment might have been the Rhys Hoskins signing. that happened in that window, and possibly the Brandon Woodruff signing. Also, let's see. Oh yeah, there was a Joey Weimer looking at Thiago Vieira and being like, "What the bleep was that?" I had a nasty off-speed pitch, so that was fun too. But I mean, those are a couple of the top moments of the Austin Nola era in Milwaukee.
Yeah, hard to argue. We didn't have Nola yet when the Churio extension dropped, did we? Or did we have?
No, we did not. Churio was before that. That was November and finalized at the winter meetings, and Nola was January 5th.
Okay, got it. Well, that would have been number one probably for me, but you know, too early. Austin Nola, we hardly knew ye.
We hardly knew him at all. Yeah, and now he's off to Kansas City. So I hope he will enjoy the barbecue down there and just have himself a great time. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm getting hungry now. I'll actually be there at the end of March. I'll go say hi to Austin Nola and ask him what his favorite memory was.
Yeah, well, we'll ask. Yeah, what's your favorite memory in a Brewers uniform? Probably the see-through pants.
right.
Oh man. All right. So that's the catching situation. So yeah, Nola's out. Sanchez is in. And the three-man weave potentially is in, which is going to make it difficult on the bench because you only have so many bench spots, and if you're going to use two of them on catchers with Sanchez and Haas, that's going to make it difficult to fill the rest of your spots. But the Brewers may have potentially found a solution to that, and that is moving superstar outfield prospect Sal Frelick to the infield. And that's something that's also came out in the past week, that the Brewers have had Sal Frelick working with Dustin Pedroia, of all people, on infield work, second base, third base. We've seen a lot of him on social media at third base, not so much at second. But, Matt, this is a very interesting move, and one that, when you really take a look at it, makes a ton of sense. Because that outfield group that they have of Yelich and now Churio plus Mitchell, Weimer, and Frelick, that's five guys who are pretty much locked in long term, and there's only three outfield spots to play. So if you're going to get everyone at bats, you're going to need to move some guys around. And Sal Frelick, he kind of looks like a second baseman, doesn't he? He kind of looks like he could be an infielder. He played some infield in the past, and you know that could be a way for the Brewers to get Frelick in the lineup just about every single day, while also getting Mitchell and Weimer and Churio and Yelich all of the at-bats that they need. And it can put their best nine bats in the lineup every single day. And Frelick being able to play both infield and outfield, that kind of super utility spot, is going to be huge for the roster math if they do indeed carry two catchers.
Definitely. I think when you look at the positions, third base, it definitely makes all the sense in the world. That was clearly a very unsettled position. No clear starter going into it. We spoke about this, you know, as we were looking at the, you know, initial opening day roster projections. You know, Andrew Monasterio is the incumbent just because he is. He played the most games there last season of anyone who returned. But is Andrew Monasterio really who you wanted as your starting third baseman? So third base makes a ton of sense to work Frelick out there, but also second base as well. You know, Bryce Terang, you want him to succeed. The Brewers still believe in him. He was solid down the stretch last year, but you know, here in his sophomore year, is that bat going to be able to hold up for an entire year this time? You know, the defense will. You're not worried about that. So you get a little bit of backup there at a position that, you know, Frelick has a little bit more experience in his past, having played there a little bit. I think when it comes to the outfield, it makes obviously a ton of sense if you're the Brewers and wanting to make sure that Joey Weimer gets a chance to be on the 26-man roster. As we were looking at that roster math with carrying three catchers, it made it hard to include Weimer. Gets a lot easier if Frelick kind of works into the utility infielder picture or starting third base pitcher, who knows. they already said actually he's going to be starting at third base in one of these upcoming initial Cactus League games. So they're serious about this. So I think it's a great thing for Weimer. It's, you know, maybe not such a great thing for Tyler Black and his chances of making the initial, you know, 26-man roster and being added to the 40. And also, I, you know, with Joey Ortiz now, like, I'll be interested to see what happens to him when it comes to his roster spot, because now you have, you know, an extra little bit worked into the infield equation. It's just all very, very interesting what it, the implications that this has for the roster, but for the Brewers and their flexibility, positive, positive, positive. Only a good thing.
Yeah, I will say that definitely the big loser of these moves the past couple of weeks has been Tyler Black.
For sure.
Because when the Brewers brought in Joey Ortiz, that's more competition for that third base spot. And Ortiz has a 40-man roster spot, and Tyler Black doesn't. So that gives Ortiz a leg up there. And now with Sal Frelick being worked into the third base mix, that's yet another top shelf prospect, graduated prospect now, working into that third base mix that's already on the roster, that, that has big league experience. That makes it even more difficult for Tyler Black to crack the group. So Black definitely, it seems like, is getting moved down the depth chart. It's going to be very difficult to see him making this opening day roster. Now, granted, we still could see him at some point soon. There's still a lot that can happen. We haven't played a single Cactus League game yet. But even still, for Black, it definitely has been made tougher on him to make this team. But overall, I think the Brewers are putting themselves in a very good spot to have options at that position, to have Ortiz, to have Frelick, to potentially have Black. It's also going to be tough on Monasterio, for him being the incumbent to keep his job. This is not politics, where incumbents generally do keep their jobs every single time, no matter how good or most likely bad they have been at it, they end up keeping it. But still, Monasterio, he bulked up this offseason. He's looking good, but Sal Frelick and Joey Ortiz are going to be two tough guys to hold off for that third base job for Monasterio.
Yeah, and let's not forget, we didn't mention Owen Miller either. He's got a minor league option left, technically. Does he end up making the 26-man roster as highly as they thought of him last year, and how much he ended up contributing to the Brewers in 2023? You know, there's again, implications down the line on, you know, all these different players by what they're doing, but this is what spring training is all about. You know, they could see what they have, and then Frelick never plays a game on the infield during the regular season. That's entirely possible. And with Tyler Black, it's, let's not forget, too, he played 39 games at AAA last year. That's not a ton. He has not played that much. He's still young.
It's more than Jackson Churio.
That's true. That's very true. But Jackson Churio is the second coming. So, you know, a little different.
Jackson Churio is getting paid $82 million. He is
for a reason.
He's different, as they would say.
He is, I believe the kids would say, he is him.
He is. He is in a class of his own.
Yes. So Tyler Black, he's still going to get his time. Don't worry. But, you know, it might not be as early as some fans were maybe hoping. And that's okay. It is always okay for, you know, those prospects to get a little bit more seasoning down in the minor leagues. Only makes them hungrier and only makes them better prepared once they do finally end up making their major league debut.
Yeah, absolutely. And keeping him down for another couple of weeks, you can get an extra year of team control out of him too. I don't think that's not why the Brewers are doing this. I don't think that's the case here. But I mean, you can look at this at moving Frelick. Like there are legitimate reasons for Frelick being there, for Ortiz being there, and not the whole service time manipulation thing there with Tyler Black. That's not what's going on there. Now, if that's something that ends up happening. I mean, he could be down for a bit. Who knows? Injuries could always happen. Luis Urias got injured on opening day last year, and that changed up the whole roster mass. So anything can happen in that group. So we still could see him soon, but it definitely became a much larger uphill climb for Tyler Black to make the opening day roster. But, you know, Frelick being able to be that utility guy, if he can play second base, third base, and all three outfield spots, that's going to make it easier for the Brewers to carry three catchers, because then you could have, you know, your backup shortstop slash infielder, plus you have Frelick, plus you have, you know, Weimer and Mitchell and all those guys, and you're able to fill out a bench with that and still keeping all the pitchers that you need as well. So I think it's something that definitely is going to work out well for this team. And Joey Weimer, I'm actually very excited to see him this year. Now, we kind of thought he was the odd man out coming in just because he didn't really do all that well last year. But watching videos out of spring training, Matt, there have been a couple of swing changes with Joey Weimer. He has definitely calmed the bat down.
Mm-hmm.
The whole little, whatever it was, sword thing that he was doing, dropping his hands like down to his hips and then back up again and then trying to swing, that's gone. All that extra movement has been largely eliminated. And I am very excited to see him catch up to velocity and face breaking balls now and see what he can do and see how well those changes are going to work. Because Weimer has as much power as anybody in this system. I mean, if you can just get him to be able to hit breaking balls and not flail wildly at them and be able to catch up to the big league velocity, I mean, that dude can rake.
Yeah, it was nice to see, like you said, you know, all that bat movement being gone. He's got the freaking muscles where it's not like he needs the momentum with the bat or something like that, you know, for the power. He's got it just internally. And when you see that, you know, you remove that and kind of, you know, keep that from distracting from your focus, and you get to now just watch his swing. His hands go through the zone so much faster, which I have to imagine is going to help him with, you know, some of the breaking balls that he struggled with, that, you know, he had so much going on that when he was identifying one, that he just wasn't able to, you know, catch up to it almost. Now he can, you know, sit back a little bit longer because he's not doing all the stuff and just get his hands through the zone real quick and be able to handle those breaking balls a little bit that were his Achilles heel at times. I can only imagine all of this is going to just work so much better for him. Very excited too, especially like now that we're going to start to play games soon. Really looking forward to seeing Weimer at the plate against pitching and see how that's going to translate.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, pitchers are going to be feeding him curveballs because that's what the book was on him last year. He was like Pedro Serrano. You give him a fastball, he can absolutely rake it. If you give him a curveball, it's not going to go well for him. So that's really one of the things I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see a fully healthy Garrett Mitchell as well. And hopefully he can stay that way throughout the entire season, because I've been so excited about Mitchell since they drafted him. And, you know, he was off to a great start last year. And then the shoulder injury just derailed the entire season. We were able to see him a little bit at the end. But still, I want to see a full season of Garrett Mitchell in the big leagues and see what he can do. Because he's got power potential as well. He's also a really talented hitter. So I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do. And Frelick being able to be in the infield makes it easier for us to see all of these guys more often. Makes it easier for us to see Frelick and Weimer and Mitchell, all of them at the same time in the lineup, plus seeing Churio, which we all want. And then almost the forgotten guy is Yelich and his big contract. And coming off a solid season last year, and he's not even the most exciting outfielder that we're talking about here.
Right. Well, hopefully he is.
Hopefully he is.
DH and giving some of those other guys the actual defensive time.
You got Sanchez, but you've got so many options to work through, and that's a good problem to have. That's something that we haven't had the last couple of years with this offense, where it's just like you have too many good hitters and not enough lineup spots to put them all. Mm-hmm. That's something that we haven't seen in recent years.
Right, right. They need this. They need this depth. And they need this flexibility, especially, again, you know, Pat Murphy being a first-year manager. He has, obviously, yes, he has his managerial experience. He has his experience with the Brewers. This is his first chance running the helm, so give him as many options as possible when it comes to filling out his lineup and, you know, hopefully, you know, filling out a lineup that he doesn't end up getting tossed to delivering to the other team before a game even starts. On his little scooter, of all things. I don't think they'll let him bring that to Milwaukee, though. I mean, that's just a guess. They should, maybe just for the clubhouse.
Oh, yeah, yeah, just in the clubhouse. He'll be driving that thing around, I'm sure. But, yeah, I don't think he's going to go out and mound visits in the seventh inning and be like, all right, I'm going to bring in the reliever and go out there on his scooter. I don't think he's going to end up doing that.
Have a little bit of fun, Major League Baseball. Come on.
Yeah, we can have a little parking spot next to the Bat Boy there by the dugout, and Murph can just get on it, drive on out to the mound.
Right.
I could totally see Murph doing that too, because Murph's a jokester, and you know he'd be totally willing to do something funny like that. You know, when you're in a serious game, him just going out there on a scooter. I mean, he's not that old that he really needs it, that he can't walk out there. I mean, he's 65, but still, like, that's. It's just, it's fun, man. It's fun seeing the videos on social media, too, from Pat Murphy's pep talks to his team. It fires you up, man. Like he's a guy that you want to run through a brick wall for.
Mm-hmm. Props to the Brewers social media team. I don't know who's running things these days, but, man, they've been on a heater here at the beginning of spring training. All the videos, all the stuff they've been putting out has been just quality content, from, you know, videos of the guys taking batting practice to the pitching to the Adames asking, you know, other guys questions and Pat Murphy contents. I've been really happy with what they've been putting out and looking forward to that continuing into the season too.
Yeah, it's going to be a ton of fun this year and just what they've done. Just getting you hyped up for the season.
Yeah.
Just super excited for it. And baseball's back, man. Just being able to see the videos and hear the guys talking and everything like that. It seems like this team is having more fun this mm-hmm. year than they've had in the last couple of years. Like, even I'm not even going to say he who shall not be named. Even his pep talks weren't super peppy. They weren't super fire you up, let's run through a brick wall kind of pep talks. Like, it was just kind of like, okay. That's a thing to say, I guess. But, you know, Murphy, completely different demeanor, completely different attitude. And I freaking love it, man.
Yeah. Konzo was definitely the calming presence. Let's keep everyone grounded. Let's keep everyone's kind of eyes on the prize. Don't let anyone get too low, but also don't let anyone get too high, and just, you know, stay the course. And that worked for a very, very long time. But you're right. Murphy seems more of a pep talk, let's get the guys fired up kind of thing. And the players seem to be taking to it pretty well. Like, and that was what was always going to be one of the reasons why this hire was a smart hire. We knew that the team absolutely adored Pat Murphy, and they were going to respond to him well. And just for that sense, not even talking about the actual experience that the guy has, because the guy, you know, outside of, you know, only having the interim experience at the major league level, the guy had years and years and years of previous managerial experience otherwise. So he had that. But that the experience that he had with the Brewers and those players is so important and is going to help him out so much as he now makes this his own team. And I just feel like when we get to those swoons in that long 162 game season, and you know, it happens to every team. You go through those cold spells where you need a kick in the butt to kind of get everyone back on track. I have more faith that Murphy will be able to do that than I did Council. You never heard of things like that, closed door meetings and pep talks and things when Council was running the team. They always figured it out, but like, I feel like they might be able to figure it out faster now with a guy like Murphy at the helm.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes teams can definitely be a reflection of their manager. Like, yeah. A team's personality can be the reflection of their manager. And we saw, you know, like early on in Council's career, those teams were fun. 17, 18, those were some really fun teams. But these past couple of years, as Council has been waffling about wanting to stay in Milwaukee, all of a sudden the team's personality was a lot less fun and a lot – It was all kind of robotic as things were going through. It's just kind of like any sort of loss, we can't react too negatively to a loss. Sometimes you need a kick in the butt after a loss. Like, even if it's June and it's just like, hey, you know, it's just one game out of 162 and, you know, we'll figure it out. Look, sometimes it's like, look, that's an unacceptable loss. You guys got to get it together. And you need a pep talk to do it. And you know, you need... Sometimes you need your manager to go in there and yell at you and wake you up. And be like, guys, this is unacceptable.
Right.
Didn't really seem to have that previously. And yeah, Murph is absolutely loved by the clubhouse, and it keeps some continuity of the success that they've had. But it definitely brings a different personality, a different style. And I'm excited to see the style of leadership and managing that Pat Murphy is going to bring to this team. And, you know, it's definitely going to be different, but, I'm excited to see what's to come here.
Yeah. And when you know, talk about those early teams and Council's tenure that, you know, were, you know, they were fun and everything like that, a lot of that, and we've so many times in so many of these, you know, previous years talked about how a lot of that was on the players and the types of players that the Brewers had in the dugout. And, like, yes, Council was a good leader, but that, like, happy-go-lucky, you know, joking around kind of atmosphere came from the players like an Arcia and a Hernan Perez and a Jesus Aguilar and a Manny Pena. And, you know, you go down the line on all those different guys that kind of contributed to that. That's where a lot of that came from. When those players were gone, you saw a little bit of that culture disappear. Brewers still had a very strong culture, and that's a credit to Council. But when you're talking about that specifically, I feel like that all came from the players. Now you have a manager who can actually provide a little bit of that. And so maybe infuse the players with that somewhat. So same thing here. I'm very much looking forward to see what a Pat Murphy-led team is going to end up looking like. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, and it's going to be coming up, and we're going to get our first crack at couple of spring training games. Now, there is not much of anything at all that we can read into spring training games, especially these early spring training games. But hey, you know, it's baseball to watch, and that is going to be the most important thing, and that's the most exciting thing to have. So definitely looking forward to that coming up. And baseball's back. It's finally back, and we're going to have some games to watch coming up soon. And we'll be breaking all of those down with you, as well as everything else that comes up in the world of Milwaukee Brewers next week on the next edition of the Cold Brew Podcast. Thank you for listening. Again, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at DGasper24. Matt, you can follow at MKEMatt13. Thank you for listening. This has been the Cold Brew Podcast.